It took me more like 15 minutes by the time I had gotten back to the car and fought the traffic where Route 1 bottlenecked through Saco. I kept one eye on the mirror the whole way and saw nothing to worry about. I crossed the river and found a motel on my right. It was a cheerful, bright gray place, pretending to be a string of classic New England salt boxes. It was April, and not very busy. I saw the Taurus I had been a passenger in out of Boston, parked next to the end room. It was the only plain sedan I could see. I put the Cadillac 30 yards away behind a wooden shed hiding a big propane tank. No sense in leaving it visible to everybody passing by on Route 1. I walked back and knocked once, and Susan Duffy opened the door fast, and we hugged. We just went straight into it. It took me completely by surprise. I think it took her by surprise, too. We probably wouldn't have done it if we had thought about it first. But I guess she was anxious, and I was stressed, and it just happened. And it felt real good. She was tall, but she was slight. My hand spanned almost the whole width of her back, and I felt her ribs give a little. She smelled fresh and clean. No perfume, just skin, not long out of the shower.
"What do you know about Teresa?" she asked.
"You alone?"
She nodded. "The others are in Portland. Customs says Beck's got a boat coming in today."
We let go of each other, moved on into the room. "What are they going to do?"
"Observation only. Don't worry, they're good at it. Nobody will see them."
It was a very generic motel room. One queen bed, a chair, a desk, a TV, a window, a through-the-wall air conditioner. The only things that distinguished it from 100,000 other motel rooms were a blue and gray color scheme and nautical prints on the wall. They gave it a definite New England coastal flavor.
"What do you know about Teresa?"
she asked again. I told her about the name carved into the basement room floor and the date. Duffy stared at me. Then she closed her eyes.
"She's alive. Thank you."
"But she was alive yesterday," I said. She opened her eyes.
"You think she's alive today?"
I nodded. "I think the odds are pretty good. They want her for something. Why keep her alive 9 weeks and kill her now?" Duffy said nothing. "I think they just moved her, that's all. That's my best guess. The door was locked in the morning. She was gone by the evening."
"You think she's been treated okay?"
I didn't tell her what Paulie liked to do with Elizabeth Beck. She already had enough to worry about. "I think she scratched her name with a fork," I said. "And there was a spare plate of steak and potatoes lying around last night. Like they took her out in such a hurry they forgot to tell the cook. So I think they were probably feeding her. I think she's a prisoner, plain and simple."
"Where would they have taken her?"
"I think Quinn's got her."
"Why?"
"Because it seems to me what we're looking at here is one organization superimposed over another. Beck's a bad guy, for sure, but he's been taken over by a worse guy."
"Like a corporate thing?"
"Exactly. Like a hostile takeover. Quinn's put his staff into Beck's operation. He's riding it like a parasite."
"But why would they move Teresa?"
"Precaution."
"Because of you? How worried are they?"
"A little. I think they're moving things and hiding things."
"But they haven't confronted you yet."
I nodded. "They're not really sure about me."
"So why are they taking a risk with you?"
"Because I saved the boy." She nodded, went quiet. She looked a little tired. I guessed maybe she hadn't slept at all since I asked her for the car at midnight. She was wearing jeans and a man's Oxford shirt. The shirt was pure white and neatly tucked in. The top two buttons were undone. She was wearing boat shoes over bare feet. The room heat was set on high. There was a laptop computer on the desk next to the room phone. The phone was a console thing, all covered in fast dial buttons. I checked the number and memorized it. The laptop was plugged through a complex adapter into a data port built into the base of the phone. There was a screensaver playing on it. It showed the Justice Department shield drifting around. Every time it reached the edge of the screen, it would bounce off in a new random direction, like that ancient video tennis game. There was no sound with it.
Have you seen Quinn yet?
I shook my head.
Know where he operates out of?
I shook my head again. I haven't really seen anything, except their books are coded, and they don't have enough of a distribution fleet to be moving what they seem to move. Maybe their customers collect.
That would be insane. They wouldn't show their customers their base of operations. In fact, we already know they don't. Beck met with the L.A. dealer in a parking garage, remember?
So maybe they rendezvous somewhere neutral for the actual sales. Somewhere close by in the Northeast.
She nodded. How did you see their books?
I was in their office last night. That's why I wanted the car. She moved to the desk and sat down and tapped the laptop's touchpad. The screensaver disappeared. My last email was displayed under it. See you in 10 minutes. She went into the deleted items directory and clicked on a message from Powell, the MP who had sold me out.
We traced those names for you, she said. Angel Dahl did 8 years in Leavenworth for sexual assault. Should have been life for rape and murder, but the prosecution screwed up. He was a communications technician. Raped a female lieutenant colonel, left her to bleed to death from the inside. He's not a very nice guy.
He's a very dead guy. She just looked at me. He checked the Maximus plates, confronted me. Big error. He was the first casualty.
You killed him?
Broke his neck. She said nothing. His choice. He was about to compromise the mission. She was pale. You okay?
She looked away. I wasn't really expecting casualties.
There might be more. Get used to it. She looked back at me, took a breath, nodded.
Okay. Sorry about the plates. That was a mistake.
Anything about Paulie? She scrolled down the screen.
Dahl had a buddy in Leavenworth called Paul Massarella, a bodybuilder serving 8 for assault on an officer. His defense counsel pleaded it down on account of steroid rage, tried to blame the army for not monitoring Massarella's intake.
His intake is all over the place now.
You think he's the same, Paulie?
Must be. He told me he doesn't like officers. I kicked him in the kidney. It would have killed you or Elliot. He didn't even notice.
What's he going to do about it?
I hate to think.
You okay with going back?
Beck's wife knows I'm phony.
She stared at me. How?
I shrugged. Maybe she doesn't know. Maybe she just wants me to be. Maybe she's trying to convince herself.
Is she broadcasting it?
Not yet. She saw me out of the house last night.
You can't go back.